Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Every time I say, welcome back, I realize that somebody has done that far better than me. And, you know, there's these certain things that just kind of get marked in your mind that create a paradigm. And I believe that when it comes to, you know, the bellowing of welcome back, it really goes to Greg Lake and Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And as somebody that loves classical music and their classical orientation, I've always kind of favored or liked their music. And that one song, Welcome Back, My Friends, and I think it's Carnival 9 is the name of the song, but putting that aside, I just love how they kind of start that off, how the music's playing, and then he goes into this little diatribe of welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. And I feel like that's what we're in. I feel like, you know, for a long time, that this is just like, is this a twilight zone? Is this going to end? I do believe it will. I have faith that it will. The day that I succumb to the concept that this show and the concept of reclaiming the Republic will never end, then I will probably pull the plug. I will probably just go, okay, I've done everything I can, Lord. You know, who's next? Is there somebody else? Anyway, and who knows? Maybe that, at that point, it's when the Lord comes back. I don't know. But anyway, I do know a few things. And as I tell my children, I have probably forgotten more things than they have learned. See, another joke where I think I'm funny. Anywho, as you know, the show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is a content show. So this is really the bread and butter of what I do for you, because this is where I actually read source documents. These shows you should be highlighting, you should be marking. Somehow you need to take today's show and make it in your, you know, your listing, you know, to listen again, because what I am fundamentally doing is I'm creating an audiobook for you. I am going to read a source document for you. I will editorialize and talk, and forgive me for that, but I try to keep it in context. And what I am giving you is something that is so powerful that as you listen to this and listen to this and listen to this, you will hear and see for yourself how powerful these source documents really are, how they are truly our nation's treasure, and they are the weapons that we need to actually pummel unconstitutional government, this communist growth in America, and get rid of all of these things altogether. So again, this is the only show that not only gives you the academic evidence, but we give you the academic-based solutions of what needs to happen. We've got this comment line, 425-270-5416. I'll say it again. I'll try to slow down. 425-270-5416. You've got a question. You've got a comment. You'd like to have a conversation. Just place the question in a good enough detail that doesn't burn up the entire, you know, time of allowed it or allocated for you to leave a message, and we will talk. And I will call you if it lends to that. If not, I will play your question. Just be, try to be as concise as possible. Don't be bad like me. Anyway, we hope that you start understanding your responsibility as a citizen. And this is why we kind of read the source documents, so that you can understand, you know, what a citizen of this nation, and what this means to be a citizen of this nation, and what this nation really should be doing and its position and so forth. Because we all have a birthright to liberty. Those of us who are naturally born citizens have a birthright, which means we have a responsibility as well as a right too. Thank you for tuning in. I can't do it without you. We would love to help. And as a matter of fact, we've been noticing the creeping to the higher ranks of where the show is being, you know, streamed and how many people are streaming the show. Now, I know the show is aired in some markets, but when we see the streaming go up to where we're in the top 10 and maintaining top 10 positions or top 10 to top 20, that's pretty good. But we need to get it to where people are actually starting to realize that listening to Hannity, listening to Levin, listening to the conservative entertainers, they're not helping you at all. They're not empowering you. Remember, knowledge is power. Well, it doesn't become power until you act upon it, but at least I am creating what I would consider potential energy, right? Not kinetic energy, but it is potential energy that once you release it, once you act upon it, then wow, watch out, world. We are going to make changes, and I'm talking about real changes in restoring and reclaiming the Republic. Anyway. What we want to get into, as I told you, is we want to get into the vetoes. And so the first veto we're going to go into is Madison's, because it's the first one. And this is all about the challenging of the Department of Transportation or the constitutionality of the Department of Transportation. What I am going to be doing, and this will probably span two shows, maybe more, two episodes, but what I'm going to do, and I want to set this up now, and I'll try to remember to, you know, come back to this to help rephrase this or help you get your arms around this. I believe that there is, not there is, what's the best way to say this? Every state has attorney generals, and I believe every attorney general can either coalesce together or individually argue in the federal court system the constitutionality of the Department of Transportation. And I believe that they will win based on these three vetoes. We have three framers, and we actually have the evidence that is within the ratification debates. This is an open and shut case as far as I'm concerned. It is a slam dunk. There's no reason why the states can't dismantle the Department of Transportation. And if they do in the court system, and as a matter of fact, see, this is the problem. It has no business in the court system, but it is an argument that I believe if states actually put this in the court system, it'll leak out into the public that people will go, well, what the heck are these guys saying? And if you videotape these very eloquent arguments by attorney generals who are taking a stand against unconstitutional powers and authorities, I truly believe that it will start inspiring the people to wake up and recognize if the Department of Transportation can't be considered constitutional, then why are we allowing the Department of Housing, Education, and all these other things that clearly have nothing to do with the Constitution's enumerated powers? Why are we putting up with those too? You see my point? I believe that we can use common law grand juries to make these same declarations. I believe petitions. I believe that there are all sorts of avenues and ways that we can start creating these arguments to help open the eyes of the people. I don't believe that we have the time to get all of the people's eyes open, which is why my very specific focus is trying to get state legislators to understand the power they possess and to fulfill their oath of office and supporting the Constitution and forcing the federal government into compliance, as well as their own state government and all government, to comply to the Constitution. Anyway, the backstory on this Madison veto. Madison, as he was getting ready to retire, his friends from Congress came over to his office. They walked down Pennsylvania Avenue and they went to the White House and they said, "Hey, Jimmy boy, James," or whatever their, you know, terms of endearment, you know, "Mr. President," whatever. But they basically, these guys knew him. They had been serving for a long time, and they wanted, and they respected this man. I mean, they looked up to this man. He was the father of the Constitution. They had reverence for this man. They said, "What can we do legislatively to pass a law while you're still president that could be a hallmark on, you know, the direction of this nation, a turning point, an epoch, maybe. And what they got was Madison basically referencing Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations and the economic position of America, that if America could harness its throughput of commerce, in other words, improve its ability to move commerce from the hinterland, the interior of the United States, to the ports and overseas, and they could do this more efficiently and more effectively, that America would be the most powerful economic nation in the world. And they were absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And or Adam Smith was absolutely correct. And so basically Madison kind of laid it out that, you know, it would be good if the government had these powers. He didn't tell them to go create these powers. He was just theoretically saying it would be good if we had these powers. So they went over back to Congress, and Congress created the bill, and then they passed it through the Senate, and then as the Senate approved it, they forwarded it to the president for signing, and he vetoed it. So you could just imagine the egg in the face of these men that went over and said, Madison wants us to do this, and then come to find out he vetoed something that these guys said he wanted them to do. Well, I think there's a little bit more to that story, because I truly believe that the politicians and the avarice of power that politicians had even then lent to a little bit of why these guys wanted to create an extra power, and why the question is, why weren't they willing to amend the Constitution? But we will get into Madison's veto as soon as we come back after this break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so the title of this veto message is titled Veto of Federal Public Works Bill. And the reason it's titled like titled as such is because of the title of the act or bill that was given him, because he actually cites it. Anyway, let's move forward. March 3rd, 1817. What is the significance of this? This was the very last day James Madison was president. In other words, the very last act of president was to veto this bill in preserving the spirit and the limitations of government, that the government could not usurp a power unto itself. It had to amend the Constitution. Just so you know, now you have a pretty good background on this particular veto. To the House of Representatives of the United States, having considered the bill this day presented to me entitled, quote, an act to set apart and pledge certain funds for internal improvements, close quote, and which sets apart and pledges funds for, quote, for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce along the several states, and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense, close quote again. I am constrained by the insuperable difficulty. Insuperable. How many times have you ever heard that word used, right? Insurmountable or unbeatable, impossible, overwhelming, but insuperable. I love the vernacular. Anyway, by the insuperable difficulty I feel, or overwhelming difficulty I feel in reconciling the bill with the Constitution of the United States, to return it with that objection to the House of Representatives in which it originated. The next paragraph, and so these next paragraphs is where Madison very consciously points out the four clauses that he knew were, you know, what I call the mystical clauses, where he knew that they were problematic because people were trying to redefine these clauses and using these clauses in outside of the context of how they were defined. The courts have been doing this for years, stating and going back to what Madison says, the legislative powers vested in Congress are specified and enumerated in the 8th section of the first article of the Constitution. And it does not appear that the power proposed to be exercised by the bill is among the enumerated powers, or that it fails by any just interpretation with the powers to make necessary and proper for carrying into execution those or other powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States. Wow. Bam. I mean, it was just like, you know, a little jab and then a knockout punch, but he's not done. So the next paragraph, or actually I break these down into paragraphs, because that what he just covered was the necessary and proper clause you cannot use to aggrandize the federal government into giving it new powers, that those only go for carrying into execution the powers that are enumerated. So then the next jab, blow, knockout is, quote, the power to regulate commerce among the several states, close quote, cannot include a power to construct roads and canals and improve a navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and secure such commerce without a latitude of construction departing from the ordinary import of terms strengthened by the known inconveniences which doubtless led to grant this remedial power to Congress. In other words, you know, when they were granting the federal government this ability to govern, it was very constrained because the states did not want to create a centralized government to being able to do all these things. Moving forward, what I'm doing is I'm just highlighting that you cannot go, you know, without departing from these terms. And the reason I'm doing this is as I go through this, and if you actually see my notes, these are all color-coded, and I have highlights and underlining, and so I, you know, make one thing stand out a little bit differently so that, okay, bam, there's another point. So forgive me for making a little note. I just was explaining to you what I was doing. So the next paragraph or this next big segment covers the common defense to provide for common defense and general welfare. So the first clause that he covered, or I should say the mystical clauses, right? The first one he just jabbed and knocked out was the necessary and proper. The second one was to promote, or no, not to promote, that's coming up. He just knocked out the commerce clause, the intent and how it was defined. Boom. You can't use the commerce clause to aggrandize the power to the Department of Transportation. And, you know, and if you've ever argued with people, where is the constitutionality of the Department of Transportation? Many people will point to the Commerce Clause. Oh, well, clearly the Commerce Clause. No, you don't understand the Constitution. The Commerce Clause only allowed the federal government to be the controllers of commerce going to foreign nations and coming back, and to ensure that states could not engage in economic warfare by creating constraints or barriers to other states' commerce. In other words, the state of California cannot dictate to the state of Michigan how it's supposed to build cars and that it has to meet their emission standards or any type of standards whatsoever. You want to have your own standards of vehicles? Create your own factories, make your own vehicles, and then, you know, state that these are the types of vehicles that we will license or what have you. But you can't dictate to another state. And actually, you have a hard time dictating to people that they can't buy products from another state. Going down that path is a very bad path, period, when it comes to a free government. And this is why I constantly, and you'll hear me say this, that monopolies are good as long as they're not protected by government. Free monopolies are very good for society and very good. And I know this flies in the face of what most people have learned, but I would challenge anybody to go look at the Alcoa monopoly. It was a free monopoly that basically kept product prices down, and the availability of products was just, we were better off with Alcoa being able to do what it did. And when the federal government stepped in to help protect these other mining companies that were wanting to compete with Alcoa, that was outside their purview, and what they did was they damaged a perfectly good operating monopoly that was keeping prices cheaper because it was in Alcoa's best interest to make sure that aluminum was cheap. It was so cheap that the complaint of the other mining companies was saying, we can't do the processes at their price. They're too good. They're making this product too cheap. We need the price to come up so that we can, and that's the same thing with fracking. Well, we need oil to cost $50 a barrel so fracking can be done. Are you kidding me? That means that we've allowed government to create a ceiling. The cost of crude oil has to be $50 or more so that we can frack. That's crazy. That's not free economics. Anyway, and we don't have a free economic system. What we have is exactly what Britain had, and it is a mercantile system where government controls all of these types of things. But anyway, back to this next, to provide for common defense and general welfare. Quote, Madison again, to refer the power in question to the clause, quote, to provide for common defense and general welfare, close quote, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation as rendering the special and careful enumeration of powers which follow the clause nugatory and improper. In other words, by just saying that the government can do anything, you know, to provide for common defense and general welfare, That general power then is completely negated by the following powers because it is a preamble of this kind of speaking to a spirit of what these following powers are, because the fact that they listed the actual powers behind that did not even come close to, you know, providing any type of general power. They were very defined, and they were very specific enumerated powers. So I'm going to read this again because What Madison is saying is that this preamble cannot be asserted as a power. Quote, to provide for common defense and general welfare, close quote, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation as rendering the special and careful enumeration of powers which follow the clause nugatory and improper. So these powers that follow the clause basically would make them improper clauses because they wouldn't be within this grand general power. And actually the reverse is effect here, because this is just a preamble speaking to the spirit of the following powers, and then they define what those powers are. It's really that simple, folks. But I know for most people, it's just like, I know there are certain topics that my eyes can roll, like feelings and those types of things. My eyes will roll back in my head, and I just, you know, get clouded. But anyway, I'm hoping this is making sense. We'll be right back, and we'll pick up where we left off when we come back from these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay. So I knew I didn't have enough time to finish, because this is only the lead-in of this paragraph. This is actually just a punctuation point, and then he follows up. So let me tie the first part of this again. I know I've read it probably two or three times now, but and even more so in other episodes. But let me put this into context. To refer to the power in question, to the clause, quote, to provide for common defense and general welfare, close quote, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation as rendering the special and careful enumeration of powers which follow the clause nugatory and improper, period. Such a view of the Constitution would have the effect of giving to Congress a general power of legislation instead of the defined and limited one hitherto understood to belong to them. The terms common defense and general welfare, quoting, quote, common defense and general welfare, close quote, embracing every object and act within the purview of a legislative trust. it could have the effect of subjecting both the Constitution and laws of the several states in all cases not specifically exempted to be superseded by laws of Congress. It expressly declared, quote, that the Congress of the United States and laws made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges of every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution of laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding, close quote. Such a view of the Constitution finally would have an effect of excluding the judicial authority of the United States from its participation in guarding the boundaries between the legislative powers of the general and state governments, inasmuch as questions relating to the general welfare, being questions of policy and expediency, are insusceptible of judicial cognizance and decision. A restriction of the power, quote, to provide for the common defense and general welfare, close quote, to cases which are to provide for more by the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into execution. If a general power to construct roads and canals and to improve the navigation of watercourses with the train of powers incident thereto be not possessed by Congress, the assent, now the assent of the states, in other words, the states allowing this to happen, whether directly or indirectly, in the mode provided in the bill, cannot confer the power. The only cases in which the consent and concession of particular states can extend the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. He's talking about Article 5 and Amendment. In other words, even if the states go along, the only way this becomes legitimate is through an amendment. It will always be a violation, regardless of how many years, how many centuries go by, where we're doing something, or the federal government is doing something that is outside the bounds of the Constitution. And so, right there, basically, what Madison just did was he did the jab punch knockout on the general welfare and defense clauses, and he even proved that the supremacy clause was those things that were in pursuance. He didn't necessarily highlight how the supremacy clause, and he does in other cases, but he didn't necessarily highlight that the supremacy clause isn't a portal, but he does, like I said, in other cases. But he does point out that the general welfare and defense, or the general defense and welfare clause, the commerce clause, and the necessary and proper clauses, and when you accept or bring in the paradigm of a general power like this, very specifically, the, you know, to promote for the general defense and welfare, then the supremacy clause would annihilate the boundaries of the federal government, and it takes the construction of the Constitution so far outside of how it was defined that it no longer is recognizable. And this is how and why the federal government has been able to dupe us into believing that these mystical clauses, the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, the Defense and General Welfare Clause, and the Supremacy Clause are not portals to granting or self-granting themselves their own powers. These clauses only pertain to the enumerated clauses. As he points out, that the Necessary and Proper Clause only points to that they can create laws necessary and proper to execute the foregoing laws. And the same thing with the Commerce Clause, and the same thing with the General Defense and Welfare Clause. Sorry, you know, keep on throwing these things around. So anyway, to wrap this up, he goes on and says, I am not unaware of the great importance of roads and canals and the improved navigation of watercourses, and that a power in the national legislature to provide for them might be exercised with signal advantage to the general prosperity, quote, or you know, period. Then he says, but seeing that such a power is not expressly given by the Constitution and believing that it cannot be deduced from any part of it without an admissible latitude of construction and reliance on insufficient precedents, believing also that the permanent success of the Constitution depends on a definite partition of powers between the general and state governments, and that no adequate landmarks would be left by the constructive extension of powers of Congress as proposed in the bill, I have no option but to withhold my signature from it, and to cherishing the hope that its beneficial objects may be attained by a resort for the necessary powers to the same wisdom and virtue in the nation which established the Constitution in its actual form and providently marked out in the instrument itself a safe and practical mode of improving it as experience might suggest. Now, they've already, up to this point, they've already made 12 amendments. So why not give the federal government an amendment? Well, I believe that the divine hand of providence stepped in once again, because we did not get an amendment to give them this power. Because I believe at this point in time of history, the only way to have a good highway, waterway, and such system would have been through the federal government. Because at that point in time, the federal government was consolidated where they could work together and do things very efficiently. Now that states have this connectivity to where state legislators are actually able to interface with each other in a minute's notice over phone calls online and so forth, our government now has been able to shift into a new epoch of, you know, virtual governance, to where giving the federal government powers over domestic matters such as the Department of Transportation would be antithetical and not of the spirit of the Constitution, where states could easily begin to cooperate. And here's the whole thing. Here's the most important part. The spirit of the Constitution was to ensure that the federal government had an outward-facing focus on the security and interfacing for commerce and trade and those types of things, that the states themselves needed to work together. And now with the technology and everything else, we can work together. We can actually create a polity to where the states themselves can have its own Department of Transportation to ensure that everything it is doing is in the best interest of the Republic, because it has only been proven with the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, so forth and so on, and all of these other departments, that the federal government has actually done things that have been, antithetical, or they have been non-productive. They have actually helped and benefited corporations and foreign nations more than they have benefited us. The fact that our government has allowed a cartel to exist, such as OPEC, to allow, you know, the gouging of oil prices instead of actually having a free oil market, it just basically speaks to the fact that the government has moved away from the spirit of the Constitution and has moved back into a totalitarian type of government and creating a mercantile economic system. And so I want to be clear, and I got less than a minute to do this. So when we come back, I will start with the James Monroe veto, and we will probably do that in the remainder of the show, because let me see, we've got one more segment after this. So after we do James Monroe, I think tomorrow we will pick up it's Andrew Jackson, the third president that actually vetoed the Department of Transportation, or a bill to form a Department of Transportation. And with that, we will hopefully then go in tomorrow as well into Madison's letter to John G. Jackson, so we can get back into probably something that you really, you know, oh, tell us more about what we can do to, you know, to recognize a good party, to, you know, how can we improve the party? How can we improve our grassroots efforts? Because I think those are important things. We do need to talk about those. So anyway, we'll be right back after this, these two promos, and we'll finish up with Monroe's veto, and then we'll kind of help prep for Jackson. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so to wrap things up regarding the vetoes of the Department of Transportation, we go to now Monroe. And so here's the interesting thing. Monroe, who was Monroe, or where was Monroe when Madison was president? Well, Monroe happened to be the incoming president and the Secretary of State. And so Congress felt, well, we couldn't get this past Madison, but we might get this past Monroe. Maybe. And so they tried to create a friendly relationship with Monroe, because Monroe became a very popular president. Now, Monroe was a good guy. I think that he got lost in some of the noble causes that he supported, because the Monroe Doctrine was, I believe, truly a doctrine that was built upon the framers and the founding of this nation. However, he was completely lost and completely wrong in signing the Missouri Compromise. He should not have allowed Congress to and let the federal government force and dictate to a state that it must become a slave state. That's repugnant. That takes away the destiny, the manifest destiny of any given state, of its choice of the direction it wants to go, and the people thereof. Are you kidding? Anyway, and I've said this many a times, but Monroe did a lot of things right, but that one thing was wrong. And I know that deep down, now that he's, you know, wherever he's at, I believe he's in heaven, And I believe that he's probably rolled over many times and probably still rolling over in his grave because he mourns allowing that to happen. What, and I believe, you know, and I'm just making this speculative, I believe that only when we, you know, get a chance to actually, you know, interface with him in heaven, will we find out why he did this. Now, there may have been this possibility that he felt that a civil war was far worse for the country than conscripting, you know, people and states to slavery. That may have been his paradigm, but I truly believe, and he, that may be his justification of why he did and committed that sin. But I truly believe that he knows without a doubt that slavery is wrong. It goes against the fundamental charge that mankind was given, that man must live by the sweat of their brow. And it is wrong for people, society, or others to live by the sweat of the brow of others. It is just wrong. Anyway, so after Monroe's re-election, and after, you know, he became almost the second unanimous president ever to be elected by the Electoral College, they came to him in 1822, right? And so this was, you know, actually, let me see here. If it was 1716, yeah, so it was in the last part of his term. He was actually just wrapping up his second term or halfway through when Congress came to him with a bill. And they basically was hoping that he might have forgotten now that they created this great relationship and they created this great bill. They thought, well, maybe we'd get him to sign this. Anyway, on May 4th, 1822, James Monroe sent back a veto message to Congress regarding this bill. And this is what he says. Having duly considered the bill entitled, quote, "An Act for the Preservation and Repair of the Cumberland Road." Now, see, this wasn't a general improvement of waterways and highways. This was an act to do very specific improvement of the Cumberland Road. "It is with deep regret, approving as I do the policy, that I am compelled to object to its passage and to return to the bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated under a conviction that Congress do not possess the power under the Constitution to pass a law, such a law." And what he says is this, quote, "A power to establish turnpikes with gates and tolls and to enforce the collection of tolls by penalties implies a power to adopt and execute a complete system of internal improvement. A right to impose duties to be paid by all persons passing a certain road and on horses and carriages, as is done by this bill, involves the right to take the land from the proprietor on a valuation and pass laws for the protection of the road from injuries, and if it exists as to one road, it exists to another and to as many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. A right to legislate for one of these purposes is a right to legislate for the others. It is a complete right of jurisdiction and sovereignty for all the purposes of internal improvement and not merely the right of applying money under the power vested in Congress to make appropriations under which power with the consent of the states though or through which this road passes, the work was originally commenced and has been thus far executed." He goes on and says this though, "I am of opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it. For although they may assent to the appropriation of money within their limits for such purposes, they cannot grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts with the United States. This power can be only granted only by an amendment to the Constitution and in the mode prescribed by it." I'm going to stop right there. And what I want to say is in what and how Monroe is really talking about this, he's definitely using a different approach and different vernacular than what Madison used. And to me, I think the plain person, the average man, listening and reading to this, it just makes a little more sense. Madison went through and weaved through the clauses and so forth. And anyway, I believe that what Monroe did here was more concise and clearer than Jackson and Madison. And so I do like this veto message, and the best parts are yet to come. So let me get to that. He says, if the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States, or that it is incidental to some power which has been specifically granted. Now I'll give you an example of an incidental power. The United States has the power as of 1809 to have full power over immigration. And therefore, they have the full control of U.S. citizens and foreigners entering and leaving the United States. And therefore, for them to have this authority in regulating those coming in and differentiating between citizens and so forth, if you want to travel abroad or, you know, go out and come back or what have you, it is necessary and proper for them to have an identification system, or what they call a passport system. Even though that is not specified in the Constitution, it is an implied power that is within the specified power. And so, moving on, it basically, he states this, it has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed only as being incidental, and I think he's probably being a little gracious in calling that. I think because he's saying claimed, I think it would be better to say it is suggested only, because claiming has a little bit stronger connotation. I think a suggestion, it is suggested only as being incidental, is probably more appropriate, because if Congress is claiming, then they are lying and they're going further beyond that. It's one thing to say, I believe this is incidental, then this is an incidental power. This is incidental to this power. I mean, see, there's a big difference. I believe, in other words, I think I'm making conjecture, but I'm not saying it as a fact. Anywho, it has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed only as being incidental to some one or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. So now he quotes them into what powers they believe that this is incidental to. From the right to establish post offices and post roads. So post roads, if you don't understand what a post road is, it has nothing to do with post offices. Post roads has everything to do with travel from the capital of the state to the seat of government or to the District of Columbia. In other words, the establishment of post roads, the federal government will ensure that there is a good roadway between your state government or your capital to the seat of government of the United States. That's what a post road is. And that's why when you look at our highway network system, if that highway does not go through, and I'll give you a good case in point, Interstate 5, which goes north and south from San Diego all the way up to Seattle, will say, hey, well, it connects, you know, the capitals north and south. But there are actually, if you look at the highway system, and unfortunately, we didn't get to finish this. I will finish the highway system and this example, as well as this veto and the Jackson veto, in our next episode. Please, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we do need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection.
If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.